Hello and welcome to the Journalism.co.uk podcast, in which we look at a glass ceiling issue in journalism and advice for supporting women journalists in progressing in the industry. During a lecture at City University last week, three female editors discussed the underrepresentation of women at the more senior levels in UK journalism. Eleanor Mills, editorial director at the Sunday Times and editor of the Sunday Times magazine, was joined by Alison Phillips, editor of the Sunday Mirror and the Saturday edition of the Daily Mirror, as well as Helen Lewis, deputy editor of the New Statesman, to talk about what can be done to support both women who are just entering the industry and those who feel like they have to choose between a successful career and starting a family. While Lewis said journalism as a profession is no longer giving preferential treatment to men over women at the hiring stage, more should be done to ensure women stay in their respective careers later on, particularly when they have children.
We come from slightly different perspectives. Alison and Eleanor are both mothers, so they both experience what it's like to have to negotiate things like maternity leave. You know, Eleanor talks a little bit about having negotiated one day working from home when she first came back to work. So I haven't seen those things yet, but I do believe very strongly that it is, you know, journalism is a fantastic career for lots of reasons. It is also one that I think that does not discriminate against women now, certainly at the hiring stage. So, you know, we see lots of applicants. You know, our applicants for our jobs are 50-50 men, women very often. There is no problem kind of getting women into journalism. Where I think the problem is retaining them. And you particularly see that once you get past 30, once people start thinking about having kids, and also in the sense of whether or not they return after they've had children. You know, maybe people need to take a couple of years out, but do they ever kind of come back at the level that they were at, or do they decide to go into PR, something with more stable hours, or do they decide to go freelance and therefore be able to kind of control their own diary a bit more? Being a woman in journalism is both a blessing and a curse. I think the downsides of it can be things like, you know, for example, the way that the job is structured can be very difficult to deal with caring responsibilities. Now, that's not unique to women, but women do tend to be the primary carer when they have kids. Actually, they tend to be the primary carer when their parents get old as well. It falls more on their job. So that all the way through women's career lives, they are the ones who end up feeling the impact of that unpaid work. So I think that's why I wouldn't say that I have cracked the glass ceiling, because no, I haven't had to face any of that. And I think you can only really say that you've kind of gone through it when you've managed to negotiate yourself a way around that. Now, you know, lots of people, their ambitions might be that they do want to spend more time with their children. There's nothing wrong inherently with going freelance or moving out into another career if that's how you want, you know, your life to be. But I think one of the things that Eleanor was saying was really interesting was about how actually a lot of women are very hard on themselves because they feel that they want a partner who has a very high-flying job, and they want to be the primary carer of their children, and therefore they make decisions that mean that they end up leaving the journalism as a workplace. And I think that's something to bear in mind, that there are still people who make decisions about their lives that lead to them leaving the industry, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, because for those people it is the right thing to do. However, it does have a big impact on how news is discussed, how news is framed. And I think that's something that Eleanor and I, in our roles in women in journalism, are always keen to talk about, which is the effect of having a very male news desk or a very male backbench or a very male, you know, heads of production. Does seem that certain things are seen to be the kind of things that people are interested in. So, for example, you know, childcare is seen as this kind of niche subject. Well, in political terms, it's a huge policy issue. It's something that really moves, you know, a huge number of votes, actually. People, you know, all the parties made very competitive offers on childcare at the last election because they know it's something that people really care about. But in some ways, it's not treated as seriously. It's seen as being kind of a soft issue compared to something like defence. And I think that's partly to do with a very male lens being applied to news. So whilst you might say it's great for people to make their own decisions and their choices about what's best for them in their lives, we do still need to talk about the structural issue of having a small, non-representative group of people deciding what makes the front pages or decide what makes, you know, the news bulletins.
Things like asking for a pay rise or negotiating a salary can be tricky in general, but it shouldn't constitute a gender-specific issue for women in the newsroom if they are aware of the value and expertise they bring to a certain position.
I think it's difficult because one of the things that Sheryl Sandberg's book Lean In did was look at, are women, you know, are aggressively negotiating their salary packages in the way that their male peers might do? And she discovered, you know, that they weren't. They were a bit more kind of like happy for whatever they would get, really. They weren't, you know, they weren't really going in and negotiating raises in a very strategic way. she also said something which I think is very important, which is there is a reason for that, which is that being bossy, you know, being powerful, those are things that, you know, in men we see as very positive attitudes. You know, oh, he's very ambitious, you know, he's very thrusting, he's very go-getting. In women, those tend to be read much more negatively. You know, she's very pushy, she's very demanding, she's very out for, you know, I worry that she's out for herself. So there is a very good reason why. It's not just that all women are rubbish and useless and too delicate flowers to ask for us. You know, a lot of them must realise subconsciously that if they ask for a pay rise, it has a possibility that they will become more disliked and more dislikable. I'm afraid, unfortunately, there's no better advice to give, really, than you kind of have to do it anyway, and you just have to be, you know, really good at your job, so that your boss kind of has to just acknowledge that you are worth it. Because the more women that do it, the more it will just become a thing that people do, and that it will lose its gendered aspect. But yeah, it's very tough, women. They're making, you know, you're choosing between two unpalatable options there.
But what should news organizations do to ensure women are well represented in the newsroom and more broadly in journalism?
I think there's a good case for more transparency. So, you know, there are parts of journalism, for example, the VIDA count, which looks at the number of men's and women's books that get reviewed and whether or not they are by male or female reviewers. And that's quite useful because I think it helps people realise that there is a disparity, and even it happens in ways that they perhaps mightn't expect. I think there's a well-established problem. It's called the 30% problem, which is when women's representation gets to about a third, people think that it's got to half. They think, if anything, there's sort of slightly too many women. And I do think there is a danger, you know, because people know that they have to have a woman, say, on a panel. When they've got one woman, then they kind of think, well, you know, out of five panellists, they kind of think, well, no one's going to have a go at us for not having, we've got a woman on there. And they never stop to think about why you wouldn't have two women or three women, or some, you know, occasionally as a fluke, why you have a panel with five women on and not a panel talking about women, which is what tends to happen. You know, I saw someone tweeting about tech conferences, one of the problems with them being that, you know, you end up with very few women on the bill, apart from they do a women in tech panel, and then that's where you find all the women. And that's a ghetto of its own kind, really, which is a problem. But yeah, I think more transparency about employment would be great. You know, and flexible working is the other thing that I think is absolutely key. And actually trying to encourage your male employees into flexible working, so it just becomes something that isn't stigmatized. It isn't something that seems like, well, that's what slackers do in the company, because most people I know who work from home work, you know, as long or if not longer than they would if they were in the office, because actually most people are slightly guilty about being at home, and therefore they overcompensate by doing longer hours and sort of checking their emails at 9 o'clock at night. But if that just becomes something that prominent men in the company always work from home on a Tuesday because they've got small children, that really destigmatizes it throughout the company. So I think those kind of things are really important.
Emma Barnett, women's editor at The Telegraph, said the situation in broadcast journalism might be slightly more balanced than in print, for example, but news organizations publishing exact numbers of how many women hold senior positions in their newsrooms might have the opposite effect and discourage women from entering the profession.
I think the number of national newspaper editors, it's kind of pretty obvious that we've not really got as many women, if any, really. So there's obviously an issue at the top. I think at the bottom, there's probably, in some ways, more women coming into journalism than men. In the broadcasting world, which I'm allowed to talk about as well briefly, I think it's a little bit more balanced. And yet still, on air, which is, I'm a presenter, when I was at LBC, for instance, there were 3 women and 18 male presenters. So something definitely not going correctly. And I think one of the reasons often given is about children. You know, the issue of flexible working in a newsroom should be actually there, especially as we're 24/7. And yet lots of people struggle, I see, with getting 4-day weeks, or at least making that work with a very demanding schedule that is being a journalist. I'm kind of in two minds about publishing numbers, and I don't really see what that does for you. I mean, for me, journalism at the heart of it, beyond what the actual job is, but surviving in journalism as an industry, I always say to journalism students, if I get the chance to talk to them, is you've got to be entrepreneurial. I set up a women's section 3 years ago at The Telegraph. It was not easy to do. But I'd been the tech editor and I really enjoyed that experience, but then I wanted a different experience. And I feel like there's no career path in journalism. I know there's no career path. You have to forge your own. I'm not sure getting a log of how many women there are versus how many men does anything for anybody.
The demands of journalism as a profession are likely to become a bigger issue when women decide to start a family, as they don't want to give up on their careers, but also require more flexibility in their working schedules.
The irony is we need men to start asking for flexible time as well. And I think it's horrible to say it, but I think when men do it, it'll normalise it more. If it just continues to be a women-only problem, then we're not really making any progress. So I think the advice would be, you know, be brave, have a good relationship with your boss, and if you can make it work, make it work. But I think the big difference between my generation and the generations above me is a lot of people in my generation look at the hours that editors pull, and they want something more from life. And let's be honest, journalism doesn't pay what it used to. So I think people don't necessarily leave journalism, but they end up having it as part of a portfolio career because they have to do other things to pay the bills and at least get somewhere along to earning what they should be earning or want to be earning. And therefore, it seems like they're all leaving, but they might just not be taking the jobs that are 9 to 5 or, you know, 9 to 9.
In July, Barnett gave a talk at TED for Covent Garden Women event in London about female ambition and how women's progression in their careers can be affected by other factors in the workplace, not by their lack of ambition and determination.
I wasn't really buying this whole line that women need to lean in and then it'll be okay, because I've seen people lean in so far that they're sort of falling over. I wanted to investigate, went on to investigate some of the more invisible, subtle sort of second generation versions of sexism or prejudice or barriers that women face without even realizing it sometimes. Things like presumptions people make on behalf of you but don't kindly tell you. The phenomenon of the nice guy misogynist. So he'll be very nice to you and he'll genuinely like you, but in his brain he has old-fashioned views of how far women can go. If that's your boss, that's a bit of a problem, because you're not going to get very far with someone like that, and that doesn't come with an advert. So it's kind of the insidious barriers and the things that you can't see easily I was interested in investigating as barriers to women's ambition. And ultimately what I'm trying to show is that sometimes without realizing it, women lose custody of their ambition. So it's not that they're not ambitious enough, and it's not that they aren't trying really hard, but other things sometimes that they can't control are getting in the way. You've always needed to want it enough, but I think you need to want it even more at the moment, because, you know, there are fewer and fewer jobs, and that's the sad state of our industry, really. But it's still a brilliant industry to be a part of, and there are many ways in which you can make it work. So I don't think you should accept the model that you see in front of you as the only way it has to be.
You've been listening to a journalism.co.uk podcast.